This is Simply Lowai, and you're listening to The Expert with a Heart.
When we say we're going to deliver, we do. I don't know, you know, that should probably be our tagline now. I'm just kidding. Welcome to Simply Lowai, everybody. Ahalya here, keeping you company as we begin our deep dive into the world of cross-border financing. We had Lowai, the expert with a heart, give us that wonderful introduction into the world of cross-border finance. And over the next three episodes, we're going to dive deep into this topic. Now, it's not just going to be Lowai Navlaki, who is, of course, the CEO and MD of International Money Matters Private Limited. We've also got with us Paresh Shah, the CEO of Paresh Shah Partners, who has been a financial advisor for more than 20 years now, and bringing to the podcast series a very unique perspective as someone who actually practices across the border. Welcome, Lowai. Welcome, Paresh. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So Paresh, I think I'm going to start with you. You know, in our introductory episode to this series, Lowai did talk about the need for cross-border financing, right? And where it really comes into play. But I guess I do want to establish early on where you think is a good time in someone's life to consider cross-border financial advice and reach out to a financial advisor with this particular priority in mind. Is there a right time to start, really?
Yeah, so if you meet a 50 or a 55-year-old, and if you ask me when they should have met a financial advisor, I would say 25 years ago. But if they haven't done that, so it's like when should you plant an oak? Mm. And you should have planted an oak 25 years ago to get something today. But if you haven't done it, then do it tomorrow morning. You know, yeah. At least 25 years later, you won't regret that you didn't do that today. There's not an age. I'd like to give an example. There was a successful business owner here in India who worked with Lowai and his team for many years. Okay. Their son migrated to the US to study and then started his work life up there. Mm. The parents gave their daughter, who's in another European country, money to buy her first home. And then they gave him money, but he doesn't want to buy the home. So Lowai referred him to me to help him to plan out the next moves. Now, there's a very fluid, dynamic situation out there in terms of the fact that doesn't know whether he's going to get his green card, so doesn't know whether when he wants to buy the home, doesn't know whether he'll eventually settle back because he wants to be with his parents. So in that kind of fluid situation, to be able to look at both the universes and see where it would be best to park assets, tax aspects, whether there's any money that is lying in India, as Lowai pointed out for him, he has some accounts here. What is the relevance of that? Those are some of the things that need to be looked at almost right away. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of resources now available and almost at no cost for young people to start looking at their financial planning. And I think that you should start looking at it as early as you can.
I only want to add, you know, I think that it's important to know that when you do a financial plan, you don't run your life based on that plan. Life happens and then the plan needs to get modified, right? So the important thing is, if I want to go for a holiday, at least I should know where I'm going, right? You don't end up saying, let's go to Bangalore airport and find the first flight that's going out and that's where I'm going. You need to understand at what state you need to move money. So what's the implication on tax if I did it before 31st March or after 31st March, or in the US the year is December, so before 31st December or after. So there are multifacets that need to get considered for things like this.
Okay, you know what? That's a good analogy, and I think we're going to run with the oak tree analogy throughout the podcast. I can already feel it in my bones. But I think an important way to learn when it comes to personal financing is really be able to put yourself in someone's shoes, right? So situations really help us understand what to do and what we would do. And I imagine that in cross-border financing, there are a range of situations that one has to deal with, right? So maybe let's start with the case of a couple who has recently relocated to the US, right? They've got young kids. They're in the throes of their careers. They don't really have their sights set on retirement yet, and they've got limited savings in the bank. And, you know, the only really times they consider India is when they have to visit to meet their own parents, right? So before we even dive into what to do in a situation like that, what do you think are some of the concerns that would, you know, matter to a couple in that particular context?
I think that when you look at that kind of a person, the typical concerns are that, okay, do I have enough finances to do all the things that I need to do? How best to begin my savings life? And at the same time, at that level of life, they don't want to compromise on all the things that they want to do. And creating some kind of efficiency so that they can just begin their savings life at that given moment in time. Some of them do talk about purchasing homes, or so that's a big distinction between, in, I would say, from the time that I began my practice to today. The younger kids in the age group of 20 to 35, I would say, they are more want to have experiences rather than ownership.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, you know, they want to be able to be nimble-footed, that if I choose to shift out and go from US to, like one of my clients did, they chose to take a 6-month sabbatical to go and work in South Africa for an NGO, and they wanted to do that. So if they had bought a home, then the home, maintenance, running it, even if they put a renter, all those things. But here they just, the lease ended, they left, they came back and they found a new lease and they started work again in whatever capacity they needed. So I think for the younger people, these are some of the bigger concerns these days.
Flexibility.
Yep.
I think, you know, the switch gets flipped at the time, particularly in the US, when they have a child.
Yep.
Because then you want to be picking the place you're staying in because the school is good.
Okay.
And then you say, okay, if I want to be in this place, I don't want to be, you know, bounced around outside, particularly when my child is growing up. So now I need to forget saving, take a loan, and buy a place.
At the end of the day, if you look at the planning that we put into place, I think most of the times when we look at families and even any family, if financial planning means that you just have to, you know, cut back on everything that you enjoy and just save money for the sake of saving money, then that's not living a life, you know. Then that advisor, I think, is kind of making it hard for the person to be disciplined. I mean, if let's say I was told that I need to have only salads for the next 6 months, I'll probably break that diet day in and day out, you know.
I was just going to bring up a bad situation. I was like, I relate to the situation.
So you need to have the enjoyment, the cheat days in between, a diet that's mixed. But at the same time, there needs to be some kind of discipline in it, you know. Maybe if you work on an intermittent or something like that, you're eating lesser number of meals, effectively saving money or saving on intake of calories. And maybe that kind of analogies, if we use in the financial planning world, we can come up with a balance that is relevant to everybody.
Balanced diets, I like that. I mean, we all love balanced diets, but we also love cheat days. What would the equivalent of like a personal finance cheat day be?
A financial cheat day equivalent, probably taking a vacation with a, you know, all the best amenities that you want to do, or actually taking work time off without an income, but doing whatever you feel like, and that would be an expense, but you're not having the income at that time. So let me put it this way: our output of calories minus intake, if it's a positive number, then you lose weight or you balance it out. When that intake number goes up, then you are actually adding weight, right? So which is negative. So in same terms, if you're adding expenses or cutting income, either way, that would be your binge in the financial side.
And I think as a financial planner, I think we need to ask clients that, you know, how many cheat days do you want? And, you know, what's the quantum of money you need for that cheat day? And that's it. It's essentially, you know, putting money in the piggy bank for, you know, something that I need later. So that's fine, right? I mean, you do know what date Apple is going to come out with its new phone. and you say, okay, I'm going to skip this year, but next year I definitely want to get it. So I'm putting aside this sum of money for that purpose, and then break the piggy bank and enjoy the apple, right?
Ha, take that. We've got the coolest financial advisors on our podcast. You know, I really wish you were our fitness instructors as well. Just to be asked, you know, what would you like to be your cheat day? What do you want to cheat on? That's like every person who goes to the gym, that's their dream, I think. But to move on to the next scenario now, let's, you know, take it a step further. Say you've got a couple who's been in the US for many years now. You know, they're close to retirement. They're kind of struggling to figure out whether they want to settle down in the US or they want to settle down in India. They've got aging parents as well. They're also toggling with the idea of buying a bigger home in the place that they want to settle down in, because, you know, their kids are in college. So life's kind of moving into that phase now, right? What are the concerns or things to watch out for in that scenario?
I think this sandwich generation is facing a lot of trouble, and we are seeing in actual situations, multiple sort of solutions to it. So I don't even know whether any one of these is a solution, but it's a sort of via media, which is the first thing that you do know that in this situation, the children are not interested in having any sort of connect with India. In the sense they've grown up there, they are the parent of that child who's been in the US for a while has the connect in India. Not that the grandchildren don't love their grandparents or anything like that, but, you know, asking them to permanently or even for long periods of time move to India doesn't seem to be a solution. The issue with the aging parent moving there are obviously issues which Paresh may touch upon, which is to do with insurance and things like that. How do you take care of aging parents when they come there? That's one. Second, you know, you have to think from the parents' standpoint that they have social circles built where they are in India. They have comfort that this is where, you know, they've grown up. They like whatever the environment is. And what we've also seen, and there is data and I think research around it, that if you displace an old person from their place, the deterioration can be very, very quick. So your intention to, you know, all well-meaning intention, result and outcome can be quite at cross purposes. So you have to worry about that. And so if you think about it from their point of view, you say, okay, I will frequently be available in India, and you make a plan and say, okay, this is the period when I'm going. But unfortunately, illnesses or whatever may not, you know, synchronize with that. So you have to be able to have a backup in India for someone else who can, even if there's no family, who can do it. And it's tough. I don't think it's easy at all. It got over magnified in the COVID period where people wanted to but just couldn't travel. And that, I think, has made people start thinking about this a lot more.
And you mentioned about COVID being the challenge because people could not travel, etc. However, COVID actually also, in this particular type of situation, threw up a benefit, which is what my client got. He called me and he was in India at that time. I said, what happened? Dad took suddenly very ill. And we talked through everything about where is the counselor. Socially, it was very challenging because his wife and children were in the US. Children were 8 and 12. But in terms of actual income-wise, it became a boon. The pandemic threw the boon of working from home, remote working. So he would literally log in here at about 6 in the evening and work until midnight, 1 o'clock, while in the day, in the morning, take parents for appointments or whatever. Oh, nice. And he spent almost 4 months doing it. That was a period of a very difficult period because in the US, I'd like to call this what we call the car seat year. Though in this case, the younger kid was already 8, but I call it the car seat years. Okay. So when kids are small, that you have to make them sit in the car seat in the car. Mm. And those are probably the toughest years for any young parent within the US. A, there is no school. So just to elaborate a little, schooling is, elementary school tends to be free, but there's no free schooling. So you have expense of daycare if both the parents are working. But wherever you have to transport the kids, there's a lot involved. Taking vacations is a lot. But even managing two kids who are 8 and 12 alone by the spouse was difficult. Mm-hmm. So I'm not belittling the social situation, but at least the finance situation to a certain extent got taken care of because of this work from home in this particular case.
You know, that's actually really interesting. Not a question, honestly, but I think it's important that that situation just brought up so many familial considerations that we all have to make. You know, personal financing is one thing, but we all kind of want to build this corpus to ensure a good life for ourselves and for our families many of the times. And I think it's really important to acknowledge the emotional considerations that come up in personal financing, whether it's cross-border or not, because finances do often just play a very, very important role in interpersonal dynamics as well. And I think that's something we're going to touch upon more and more as the podcast carry on. But yeah, just, you know, they can either be an aid or a detriment.
and you know, the point that you made earlier about younger people not taking a financial advisor early on, or when should they take the advisor that you were asking. I think as you understood from the conversations we are having, the financial advisor is essentially an advisor first, and the finance bit is a part of the role that they are playing. For an advisor to give you the right type of advice and for you to accept that advice, I think the very important piece is trust. Yeah. Trust only happens through time and situations. So the earlier you've signed on to with an advisor, the time when you're facing the complex situation or you need actual advice, you will not think twice before asking that advisor for advice. The point is that if you decide at that point, okay, now I'm facing a complex situation, now let me go to an advisor, you will tend to second guess because you will say, oh, let me also take a second opinion, a third opinion. And I don't think any one of us advisors is right or wrong, but we have our viewpoints and we will share them with you. And you will suddenly say, oh, three people are telling me three different things to do. I don't know whom to trust. And forget it, I'll continue doing my stuff on my own. And then you start feeling very alone, right? And
yeah. Well, it's been a riveting conversation so far, but we're going to call it a wrap on this episode. Tune in for the next one as we dive deeper into the world of cross-border financing, where we're going to be tackling really the implications of COVID-19 and the pandemic on cross-border finance, the various considerations that came up then and how it's shaped, you know, cross-border finance, and a lot more. Trust me, a lot more is the operative phase. We're going to be back in conversation with Lovai Navlakhi and Paresh Shah and me on the next episode of Simply Lovai.
That was an episode of the Simply Lovai podcast series, Expert with a Heart.